Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Collective Clicks podcast. This is the best podcast on digital marketing for real estate investors. Today, I'm going to be joined by Sean Yun, who is a strategist on my team, and we're going to talk all about location targeting. This is going to be a great episode where we talk some of those high-level strategic things. We're going to talk about how you can optimize your locations, where people go wrong, can you go too wide, can you go too narrow, what's different about this than your other channels, and a ton of other stuff. How are you doing today, Sean?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Awesome. Excited to do another episode with you. Thought you were just the right person for our topic today, which this is number 5 out of 8, I believe, of PPC best practices. As usual with these, we're going to talk about what to do, what not to do, and how do you do it very well. So anyways, I'm super excited to get into everything. Today, the topic is location targeting. So without any delay, let's jump right into it. I'm really curious to pick your brain, Sean, and see what ideas you have of how do we do this right. How are you seeing investors potentially mess up their location target, and how would you do it instead?
Yeah, it's something that there's a lot of easy mistakes that can be made when setting up your location targeting because it's very different from a lot of the other channels that investors work in. Some of the biggest things are, I guess I've written down a couple things we can chat about, but one of those things is understanding what the difference is between going too wide and too narrow, because two very easy pitfalls that you can fall into. And starting off, we'll start off with the narrow side, maybe. With a lot of other channels that investors run, I see issues where they want to treat it like buying a list. They buy a list in an area and they know exactly what they're getting from that, right? And in Google, it's and Facebook as well, it's very different where you can't just be like, I only want something here and nothing else, because you're restricting. And I guess on the small level, when you say I want, for example, just this one city and those borders, nothing else, because you know that the ARV or something is what you want.
Yeah. When you say city, you mean like city boundaries.
Yeah, city boundaries.
A lot of people say, I target one city. I target Atlanta.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you target Atlanta. It means you target like the Atlanta metro, usually.
Yeah.
Like not the city boundaries, which I think for a lot of people, those are way tighter than they actually think they are. Like when they ask us for it, we throw it on a map and we show it to them and they're really surprised that it doesn't include a lot of areas.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it, where people think cities are bigger than they really are. And city boundaries exclude a lot that people think or that people forget about. And so I think part of the issue with going too narrow is you're limiting the algorithm of Google, where Google is built on this whole precedence you're using AI to determine what works best. And the smaller you go, the less data you're giving that AI to use to be successful. And so when you're going too narrow, and you try to control it, it ends up usually just creating more problems for you because you're now limiting what Google can do. And so allowing it some breathing room and allowing it to find, and even if you give it a wider area, it'll still find stuff usually within right where you want it anyways. So that's what I would recommend, is not going too narrow, because there's a lot of problems that come with that. And then also on the wide end is going too wide. A lot of people think, oh, I'll just target the county, the whole county. And if you target a county in middle of Texas or something, like middle of nowhere, Texas, you're going to get a lot of stuff you can't dispo, because there's going to be trailer parks in there and you don't want those. You'll be finding houses that have just been beaten away. Yeah, I guess that pretty much covers what my thought is there. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to expand on a couple of things you said. So with this concept of being too narrow, I have an analogy. Let's just say I'm a flipper, right? And I buy my houses from wholesalers, right? A situation we all know really well. If I am located in Salt Lake City and I want to flip 2 houses a year, and the thing that we have to remove here is that it really doesn't take me a lot of time to, assuming underwriting and everything like that's completely automated, I don't have to like spend this time on the showings, because if we're comparing this to Google, that's how Google is, right? Yeah. Algorithm parameters, and it works within those. And it's not like it takes you a ton of time to do this, right? To see more inventory. But as a flipper, let's just imagine that were the case. If I need to buy 2 houses, I could probably buy some really good houses at really good discounts, right? If I want to flip 300 houses this year, then, and I'm just in Salt Lake, then I'm probably going to have to buy like most everything I see, because I don't really have the ability to be really aggressive on my bidding, because then I won't hit the volume goals that I have. And this is why location targeting really matters, because if you add in more locations, and that could be like, maybe I was just trying to buy 300 houses in one zip code, right? You could probably find 300 houses in your zip code, but you'd have to pay an astronomically high price to be able to get all of those deals. Versus if you were to expand out a little bit more geographically, then you'd have a lot more ability to bid low. I think of bidding in Google, like putting in low ball offers on clicks. And the higher your offer, the more likely you are to win it. The lower you can, or the wider you can go geographically, the lower you can put your offer. So you can get a lot cheaper. So anyways, I completely agree with what you said. Help me understand this, though, because there's this phenomenon. The way that PPC works sometimes, unfortunately, if we're talking about the too wide side, the way that PPC works is you can have this tiny little leak in your bucket and it just becomes all of what you're getting. People see this where you like target, for example, a city plus 50 miles. And depending on what your budget is, you might find that 80% of your leads come from pretty far outside of that city. And you get very few from inside the city, despite there being, like, if you look at the total population you're targeting, most of that population is centered around the city. And those further out areas, they are overrepresented in the leads. They might be 20% of the population, but 80% of the leads. Why does that happen?
Yeah, no, that's something that happens to a lot of people. And a lot of times, honestly, like, before I say what happens with that, I think it's something that a lot of people, it goes under their nose where they don't realize that this is the reason it's happened. They think there's some other things and stuff. So when you're having issues, I guess it depends on how you see it as an issue, because Google thinks it's doing great. And when you have locations and you're getting a lot of stuff from maybe the secondary, tertiary markets outside of the primary market you want to be targeting, it's a result of Google trying to find the cheapest leads. And what's going to be...
Which is awesome, by the way.
Yeah,
we're always pushing, in a way that's good.
Yeah, we always want cheaper cost per lead. But at the same time, this is a scenario where that might not be the best thing that you actually need. If you're in a bunch of markets and you have a $90 cost per lead, it's awesome. But they're all houses that you don't really want. There's no point in having a $90 cost per lead. And so I think part of that goes into understanding the metrics and also understanding where you want things. And this phenomenon is created by basically giving Google the wrong direction. If you are trying to push your bids as low as you can, it's going to start pushing your leads out further away from what you want. And so if you want an inner metro, for example, we'll say like Dallas, for example, you can get leads out in Timbuktu, like Cleburne, Texas, where it's not far from Dallas, but it's not what you want. And you want stuff in Dallas, it's going to cost more. And so pushing your leads as far low as possible may negatively impact you. And sorry, not leads, pushing your bids as low as possible may negatively impact you when you have a location like this. And so it's a balance of understanding those two things. And there are options you can do to tackle that. One of them is setting up primary and secondary locations, which I think we wanted to chat about here in a second. But that's, there's some options to work with that. What are your thoughts on that too?
Yeah, I would say I agree with everything you said. I'll just say it with different words. And that's that. Just picture we're putting these lowball offers in on every click. Where are you going to win those clicks? It's going to be where you're still the highest offer. And that's going to be where your competition doesn't want to be. So that's the problem with Google. And this applies to keywords. This applies to locations. I'm trying to think of other targeting parameters. It could apply to like pretty much any targeting parameter. If you have one that's less desirable and another one that's more desirable, and your competitors know that, but you don't know that, then what happens is things get really expensive in some areas. And then you naturally, Google's going to steer you away from those towards where it's cheaper, because it always tries to find the cheapest thing that satisfies the goal. And that can create issues. And this can also really depend on things like budget. Like something that can happen is if you have a really high budget and you target some metro areas, some rural areas, what you'll find is you'll get a lot of metro leads because you can only buy so many in the rural areas. So it just happens by nature. But if you have a smaller budget, then you might only get them from the outskirt areas because naturally you're just looking for the next best option, right? Every time you raise your budget a little bit higher, Google's just looking for the next cheapest lead to get you. At some point, that next cheapest lead is in the heart of Miami. But you have to have a pretty big budget where you're buying a lot of leads for that to be your next cheapest lead. That's kind of how it works. So you mentioned that it could be a bid thing, and it absolutely could be, right? If you try to push your bids down, that can happen. But I think if you're ever in a situation where your return on investment goes down when you lower your bids, then you probably just have a hole in your bucket anyways. If we're talking about locations, it could just be that the way you're bidding and the way you have your location set up, you have good areas and you have bad areas, and you just happen to be getting more leads from the good areas. And that's the luck thing, right? Intentionally doing that, it's happening by coincidence, and therefore you have good results. If you lower your bids and then you start getting more leads from those bad areas, it's not like there wasn't ever waste in the campaign. There was waste. It was just a small enough percentage that you didn't notice it. But the real problem is that you're bidding in those areas at all. it was just a diluted problem when you had a lot of stuff coming out of other places. So I think locations is one of those things where there can be legitimate problems that are hidden by different campaign structures and things like that. But whether that problem is 10% of your spend or it's 50% of your spend, it's still a problem. It's still equally worth getting rid of. It just becomes really obvious in some circumstances.
Absolutely. I think kind of along those lines where you're touching on competition a lot is understanding where your competition is in your area too, because that's going to really push things out. If you have an insane amount of competition, but like you said, if you have a lower budget, this is one of those few situations where a budget really does matter. A lot of times someone with a $3,000 budget, monthly budget, can do pretty well in a market and things like that. It's not really impacted too heavily by someone else who has a really big budget, maybe like a $10,000 a month budget. But in this case, this is one of those few cases where it is definitely important. If you have a ton of competition and they're just going to beat you out on every bidding scenario in Google, then you're going to get all your leads pushed out towards the more secondary and tertiary areas and things like that, because that's where Google's going to be able to find them rather than the heart of whatever primary location you want.
Yeah, which I agree with, but I think it's another like symptom versus like root cause thing.
Yeah,
because if you targeted the right areas, then you wouldn't have that problem.
That's true. Yeah. Understanding which areas your competition are in. So
yeah,
understanding that, be
good.
Able to target it.
Yeah. You just don't want high value areas and low value areas to be targeted together, because you'll just get a bunch of the low value. Another thing with competition, I think this is something that people think a lot about with other marketing channels, and it really doesn't need that much diligence for PPC. Like, for example, we had a client that we were talking with that has markets that's just really nice in the way that it just spreads out. And you have all these suburb areas. And then you also have the core of the market. And it's one of those typical situations where in the core of the market, you're getting deal spreads that are 30 to 50,000. And then in these suburb areas, you're getting more of a $20,000 to $30,000 spreads. And they had done a lot of direct mail and cold call and texting, and they'd never gotten a deal in that core area, like ever. But in the outlying areas, they did really well. So that they focused their business there. So then they came in to PPC saying, we want to target those outlying areas, not that core area. Why do you think that logic doesn't transfer to PPC?
I think in this scenario, it doesn't really make sense, because Google has a lot more access to information than a lot of these other things do. And just because it works in that channel, or in the previous scenarios, it's worked where it's pushed it out towards the secondary markets or, you know, the outer markets, it doesn't necessarily mean they can't get anything from those primary markets. And it doesn't mean that they can't be pushed into there, because Google is really good. You have to think about, like, Google knows a lot more about the area than you do. And even though you may think, oh, this area has done better for us, we can't really get into those areas, it's too expensive or things like that, Google can still find things. And so it's kind of like giving Google some handcuffs, is where you're limiting what it can do. And which is the whole point of Google, to be an AI-driven system that allows you to find all this information about people, and that it understands you can target so well with it. And the keywords too. Just because it's working in an outer area in a different channel doesn't mean that you shouldn't be targeting Google and, or excuse me, targeting in the whole area really with Google, and letting it decide where the best leads are going to be coming from rather than you. I think that's a pitfall that I guess we talked about a little bit earlier, where too many people try to take control, too much control over Google, thinking they know better than Google. And us as marketers, we even, like, you and I have a really good understanding of different areas and geolocations and everything like that, but we still revert and say, let's let Google do its thing and see what it tells us, because it'll understand, it'll find the data. A lot of our information is just based on what we hear and see, and Google has many more eyes and ears than we do. So
yeah,
I think that's partly answer your question. That's my opinion, is I think it's something where just because it's working in one way doesn't mean that it's not going to work on Google.
I think a core distinction to make here, because to the untrained ear, it might sound like we're just contradicting ourselves over and over again, because we're saying like, oh, be really careful to not target those locations and stuff. And then on the other hand, we're saying, oh, just let Google figure it out. But yeah. I think there's a really clear distinction here. I always think in my mind, is this something that happens before the lead is generated, or is it something that happens after the lead is generated? Because when, let's just say what you know that Google doesn't, is that if you get a lead in that town, you might be able to get it under contract, but you're never going to be able to disposition it. If you know that, Google doesn't know that kind of stuff, because that happens outside of their view. Yeah. It happens after the lead is generated. It would take a ton of offline data for Google to really start to figure that out with like closed loop tracking or something. That's a good direction to go always, but it's not really realistic for that particular type of thing. So in that case, you can count on Google to maximize your lead flow for whatever parameter you give it, but not necessarily your revenue flow because there can be items like that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, why people might want to avoid the core of a market and only go for the outskirts, it has a lot more to do with expected competition. Because if I'm going to send direct mail, for example, it really matters to me if I'm sending this mail to this person and they already have 100 postcards in their mailbox and I'm number 101, that's going to be way less effective than if I'm number 3, for example. And maybe in the core of that market, I'd be number 100 and the outskirts, I might be number 3. So you could think, is your competition going to be there or not? Because you're going to have worse results accordingly. Whereas with Google, like, you only pay once the person has already clicked. And there's only going to be so many people showing on the search. Whether you're in the middle of nowhere and you search on Google or you're in the core of a market, you're going to find the same number of PPC results generally. Because all that you can have at the top of Google is 4 results. And there's always at least 4. No matter where you are, there's at least like 4 national PPC companies that are bidding on that.
Yep.
In this industry, yes. Maybe you can find some other industry where that's not always true, but it's competitive enough that there's always at least 4 people that want to click. So anyways, it's like that competition doesn't matter, right? So a lot of people would say, well, in that core, that area, the cost per click average is $100. And in the outskirts, it's 30. Why would you advertise in the core? Because you could bid 30. And if the average cost per click is 100, there are clicks that sell for 30. And there are clicks that sell for 200.
Yeah.
And you might just get a really small number of them. But that doesn't mean that you don't want them. It doesn't mean that they don't have value.
Yeah. And honestly, this is where the primary and secondary locations thing really comes in. Where, like you said, like, Google can understand the lead flow, but it doesn't understand lead quality. And so it's our job to figure out what lead quality is and give Google direction based on it. And this is why we have the whole closed loop reporting system with all of our clients, where we ask them for feedback on the leads and how they dispote, because we want to be able to feed that back into Google and also understand on our side, is this market working better than this one? And if you do have a situation like that, I have a client that I work with, and they have an awesome understanding of their area. They've been running PPC for a really long time, so they have a great understanding of what the quality is outside of what Google can see. And so they have these set up as primary and secondary locations with a shared budget. They share the same budget, but what we do is we say, in this area, I'm willing to pay, or I'm willing to bid this much. But in this area, these leads aren't as good and they aren't worth as much to me. And we've proven that with data. That's the key aspect there, is you can't just assume that you know what areas are good and what areas are bad. You have to use the data to understand that. And these guys have run for a while, and so they do understand that. We understand that leads from certain areas are about worth only about a fourth of what they are another in their primary area. And so what we've done is we've set it up with these primary and secondary locations so that primary goes full on. That's its own thing. That's normal. But the secondary locations, we tell Google, I will take a lead as long as I'm bidding a fourth of what I'm bidding in these main areas. And that allows us to say, we still want leads here, but we're not willing to pay as much for them. So that's where that kind of situation comes in real handy, because it allows us to control the leads based on quality more than just the lead flow side that Google has visibility on.
And that is I want to share some other details of the story. I think that they bring light to some things. This company, they had a really high budget for their market at a period of time, and they pushed it to the point where it just wasn't making sense from a diminishing return standpoint. So they brought back their budget. They were targeting 70 miles from this metro area. And when they did that, they found started getting a lot more leads in the outskirts. So this is an example of a problem that was always there, became obvious when it started to consume a larger percentage of our budget, because we realized we're only getting leads from these outskirts. But they still like those, right? So that's what do you do? It's not exactly black and white. Some people would say, I still like those areas. I can still do business there. So I'll target them. But then you get a large percentage of your leads from there, and they're lower value opportunities. And you don't get any leads where you actually want them. And then the other way to think about that is somebody could think, it's not my highest value thing, so I'm going to cut it out. And I think both of those are wrong, right? What you said is the perfect way to do it. And what we saw is the amount of budget spent in those secondary areas compared to primary, it shifted a lot more towards primary, just because by nature, if you're bidding higher, you're going to get more volume there. They now have a fantastic ROI in those secondary areas and in those primary areas, because we bid according to value. Because what is ROI? It's the revenue per lead divided by the cost per lead. So if I know area 1 has a higher revenue per lead than area 2, then I just want my cost per lead to be, say, a fifth of that. And then in area 2 also to be a fifth of that. And those might be different numbers. There's one thing that I want to make clear, though, in case anybody's self-managing. This is like the sneakiest thing ever. I hate this, but Google has a way that people like to try to do this. It's called a location bid adjustment. And what you can do is you can go into different locations and you can tell Google, I want to bid a certain percentage higher or lower. And with the target CPA bid strategy, which is one that we really commonly use, if you go in and you put a bid adjustment on a location, it will accept it. It will show in platform and it does nothing. So it's so deceptive because you don't realize that what you're doing is actually making no difference. So people get frustrated with that they make these adjustments and think that it never actually impacts results. So there is no way to do a bid adjustment like that. So what you have to do is have a separate campaign and you have to set the bids differently in that separate campaign. What we like to do is still share the budget between those campaigns because ultimately you should care about ROI, right? It doesn't matter how much budget goes to the primary versus the secondary areas because there's a certain lead cost that could be really low where we'd want all our budget to go to those secondary areas. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a way better return. And if you're thinking in your mind, well, that's not true, then just make the lead cost even lower. And everybody just gets stuck on that. They're like, oh, but I still want these areas. And it's okay. What if leads were like a penny in the secondary areas? Would it be worth it? There is a point where that turns and that it's finding out where that is and bidding according to that. So yeah, the primary secondary location strategy is awesome. So that's one example of where we've done that. We have the client where they have the core of their market that's primary, and then they will go up to 70 miles out, but those are all secondary. What's another application of that same principle from another client that you worked with? Like when are you working with the primary and secondary locations for any of your other clients?
Yeah, honestly, those people who, aside from like a local market view, like this client is more of a localized thing. If you're in multiple markets after getting some data as well, understanding leads in Florida versus Alabama or something like that are worth different to me, that's another great way to understand it. So a lot of it, in my opinion, applies more on the lead quality and understanding that than just like where you are or what you're targeting. Because you can't really do a lot of this until you have a good understanding of what lead quality is going to be like. And so that's one of the caveats to that, but it's something that's an amazing tool that as soon as you're able to use it, definitely use it. So
I will give one exception though, or maybe a different way of looking at it. If you're working with a partner that does have a lot of data, then that could allow you to implement some of these strategies faster.
That's true, yeah.
And we do have a lot of that data across these different areas. And maybe it's not like nobody ever has perfect data where they say, I know exactly everything that's going to happen here. But you do know if you don't set up primary and secondary locations, then you're still making a decision, right? You're still assuming that all the areas are created equal. And maybe we don't know that area one is like exactly 30% more valuable than area two. But if we at least know that it's more valuable, then we can bid according to that, right?
Yeah.
One thing I've seen for our national clients is you'll see this all over the place. Like people love to add extra markets or cut out extra markets for reasons that don't make sense. I don't want to be in that area because the spreads are too high. I don't want to be in that area because I think the cost per lead is too high or whatever the case is, where cost per lead, we already talked about that. If it happens before the lead, then you have very little risk of being in that market. As long as Google's sufficiently trained on data, which for all of our clients is the case because we use cross-account bid strategies, but it might not be true if you're managing your own PPC. But the main point here is for some of our national clients, instead of it being black and white, like I want these areas or I don't want these areas, we'll often do like primary and secondary. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's even just based on how much data they have. We'll work with national clients that come on and they've previously been advertising in six states, for example. Ask them like, okay, you're doing Florida and you're doing Texas, but what about Tennessee? Is there a reason that Tennessee wouldn't work for you? And the answer is usually I don't have a history in Tennessee. I haven't seen it work. I don't have the data, but I do not know any reason it wouldn't work. And if that's the case, that's where primary secondary can also be good. Because I can make sure like in those core areas, we're spending the majority of the budget there. We are aggressive in our cost per lead. And then we add some of these other areas and it just brings our cost per lead down because we might have half the cost per lead in those areas because we're bidding really aggressively. And then that's just dipping our toe into the market. And if we see that it works really well, we can add it into primary and become more aggressive. But it's a way to experiment with stuff without just destroying your campaign, which is how a lot of people test locations, unfortunately. Is let me add this and then I'll see what happens tomorrow. And then I'll add this different thing and I'll see what happens the next day. And then I'll add this different thing. And it leads to a lot of really poor decisions. We work with people that have like all years of information about what location they're targeting. And it's all based on just horrible information from the start. And it's just not data driven.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly it. Is understanding what information you have and making sure that any of these... It's locations is no different than any other decision with Google Ads. It's data driven. It's got to be data driven. Don't just pull things out of the air and try it out and see what happens and then judge it based off that. There's got to be some data and some information behind making these decisions. And it's the same with locations.
Yeah. Yeah. One other thing I'd say like on the data topic, because I've seen this bias in a ton of our clients. So we both know, maybe we should share that PPC tends to get stray leads. You target area X and then you get a lead in area Y. And it's really frustrating for some people. Personally, I find it refreshing that Google doesn't know exactly where every single person lives. The fact that they're wrong sometimes,
at least a little behind.
Yeah, it gives me some hope for data privacy. But anyways, that's 10 to 20% of the leads being outside of the areas that you're targeting is really normal. So yeah, there's that. But then decisions made on that. I've seen so many clients that are national that want to constrain their targeting. They want to get tighter and tighter. And it's based on leads that they're getting that aren't even their targeted areas.
Yep.
So basically, when you're analyzing your leads and you're trying to decide what you want to do with locations, don't just use the leads. You have to use your targeted areas. Because if you just say, well, I got this lead in a really rural area, so now I want to go even tighter, it's not really going to fix that problem. So you only want to react to things if you're getting leads in areas that you are targeting and those aren't working for you. But the leads outside of that don't really make a difference.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Google doesn't have perfect tracking. It's not like buying a list where you know exactly where everybody is on that list. It's not perfect. And so it's not going to be, you know, super common, but it is maybe one or two leads in every 10 or so be outside of your area. Somebody who commutes and works in one place and lives in another, Google might not understand that. So there are situations like that. And so I think you bring a good point of making sure you're actually looking at the leads in your targeting, not outside, because the outside ones don't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing I wanted to comment on, this is just like another application of some of the principles we already described. How do you feel about statewide or nationwide campaigns? When I say nationwide, like literally nationwide, but there's a lot of people doing like 48 states or just the United States or targeting like statewide in different areas. And there's a lot of controversy around this because there's some people in the industry that promote like, this is the only way to do it. And you could be really successful with this. And then there's all the people who have tried and failed and are really upset about it. And then there are some people that do really well with it. So what makes the difference? How do we know if that's a good idea or a bad idea?
I think a big gap between those who preach it in the industry and those who really struggle with that kind of idea of targeting the whole U.S. or a whole state or something like that is the fact that these people who are preaching it have gigantic budgets and they can bid really high. Because of that, they can just beat out whoever's in those areas. And so they don't have to worry about a lot of the nuances that come with targeting because you can just throw money at it.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what a lot of these people are doing and they preach it. But what a lot of people don't understand is everyone else's is their own budget isn't able to match what the preachers are doing more or less. And so it limits them. And I think if you have a limit, not even limited by budget, but if you don't have a ton of money to just throw at everything, which is 99% of us, right? We have to be more strategic about it. This is why in our targeting, we use things like light maps to understand where people actually live, because there's no point in targeting. Think of Texas as a great example. If you just target all of Texas, you're going to get all kinds of stuff because it's huge. And most people live within 5% of Texas's like geography. It's something where if you were to do something like that, it could destroy you if you only have maybe even with maybe like a $10,000 a month budget, like that could still destroy you because you're not able to be competitive with everyone in the state. So I think that's a big part of it and why we generally shy away from that, because it's something that's only the big boys can do it.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I think it's evidence that some of those people that are doing that with really big budgets, they're coincidentally having it work instead of it being based on like true principles. Because you could take the exact same campaign, put it into the exact same area. You do it with a large budget, what'll happen is you get a lot of leads in the primary areas. If you do it with a smaller budget, you'll get a lot of the leads from the other areas. And it's the budget that makes a difference, even though everything else is set up the same, just based on the bidding and everything. I'd add a few more thoughts to it too. I think it also depends on the state. Like some states are way more rural than other states. Florida is a classic like one where you can do statewide targeting really well, especially if you're open to various exit strategies and stuff like that, because there's a lot of really good areas in it.
And the rural stuff is in the middle of a swamp where nobody lives. So
yeah,
you don't have to worry about that stuff.
Exactly. So like classic states for this are like New Jersey, North Carolina, Florida. And then when you're in Nebraska, you can get really rural, right? And it's a different story. So I think it matters where you're doing it. I also think it matters like what kind of business you want to run. Like some of these people doing this really wide, the way that their business functions is a lot of small deals and really hard dispositions. And they have a lot of contract fallout. And that's fine. It's just one way to run a business. You have to realize like different exit strategies work better for different areas. And I think we should dive into that a little bit more. But just to finish things up with the statewide and pure nationwide campaigns, I guess the moral of the story is I think a lot of times what's happening there is you're targeting good and you're targeting bad. and then dependent on various factors, some of which you might not even consciously be, controlling those factors, you could get a larger percentage of the good versus the bad. In my opinion, any percentage of bad is bad. So you have to identify like what works for you and what doesn't. And I think that mastery of your own business and understanding those things, rather than just be lazy and targeting a bunch of things, because you might be able to make it work to have a massive budget and then just throw away some of your leads that don't work out. But that's not how you become a highly optimal company. That's like a way that it works technically, but it could be done better. So let's talk about how exit strategies affect this. What are you seeing in terms of where people market based on their exit strategies?
Yeah, honestly, when it comes to exit strategies, one of the biggest things that ties into location, understanding your exit strategies. If you can only do wholesale, you're going to want to stick to like pretty primary markets and things like that. You're not going to get a whole lot in like tertiary markets, for example.
Yeah.
But
and with that too, you have to think, how do you wholesale? Because if you're using Investor Lift, which most people are, Investor Lift's a lot stronger in some areas than other areas. So you could have areas of equal population, one of which you can dispo in really easily and the other one you can't. So it's understanding like, where do you have more buyers than not? I've seen far too many people just buy Investor Lift and then just say, okay, now I can dispo anywhere. Just target it all. And it's a painful experience to realize that you can't actually do everything that you thought you could.
Yeah.
Because dispositions is hard. But anyways, I was just adding a note that not just the size of the market, although it tends to heavily correlate with the size of the market. Bigger markets have a lot more buyer activity.
Yeah, absolutely. And understanding those gets to that point is understanding your exit strategy in a way kind of determines where you want to be going. I have a client who's done pretty well, and he only targets secondary and tertiary markets, but he also only does novations. And so it allows him to do some different things where primary markets really aren't worth all that much to him because of his exit strategy.
And or so, he doesn't need to be there, at least. It would be worth a lot, but why compete with a lot of other people? And
it's just better to do it outside. But if you're doing like flips, for example, you probably want to be local so you can oversee those flips and understand what's going on, you know?
National flips. Nothing sounds like more of a headache to me.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing that goes into it. I don't have too much more to say about it, but just understanding what exit strategies you have, where those exit strategies work and where they don't, and that can help you decide where to be marketing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think a heuristic that I use is anything like heavy where you're going to be getting into flipping and stuff like that, definitely local. My heuristic for where you can go into like really secondary and tertiary markets or potentially really rural areas is either if you're willing to buy it yourself in those areas or anything that touches the MLS. A wholesale touches the MLS, a novation touches the MLS, a flip touches the MLS. And it makes a big difference. Like some of our clients that go into some of the smaller markets, you have a little bit better lead conversion, it seems, just because things aren't quite as competitive getting to the seller. There's just not as many people like marketing to them, even through other channels there. And then you can still sell stuff in the MLS in a lot of markets around the United States. So anyways, yeah, I think that makes a huge, huge difference. All right, let me see if I wrote down any other notes of things that are pretty interesting. I'd say the last one, you touched on it briefly, but let's talk about it a little bit more in detail. How do you target based on satellite imagery, and why would you do that as opposed to other options that are available with it?
Yeah, the benefit of using satellite imagery, kind of like I mentioned before, it tells you where people actually live and where there's a lot of people. Where if you like, I think in comparison, where I like to change is when people come in saying, I want to target this list of counties, for example. Then I look at the counties, I'm like, oh, there's three metros in those counties. That's maybe like 25% of your targeting. And in those cases, you worry, you're like, are we going to be getting a bunch of really rural stuff that you don't want?
You know, a classic case is Riverside and San Bernardino County in California that cover like those really hot areas that kind of near LA and Inland Empire, but they also go all the way to the Nevada border, like straight out into the middle of nowhere. Little shacks that are worth like not very much. But that's an example of that. That's one of the most extreme examples. And another good one is like Maricopa County, Zona, where you have the Phoenix Metro, and then you also go like way out into reservations and stuff like that. It's like very different parts of the market, very different value, different ability to disposition, all within a single county.
Yep. Yeah, exactly that. And so the benefit of using the satellite imagery is to be able to understand like where are the limits of like where I'm actually wanting to be targeting. And we've set our systems up so we have three different levels of that, where we have exactly what Google Maps considers the boundary of that metro. And then we have a little bit further out where it's like where the lights bleed out a little bit into it. And then we have like really wide, which we don't use very often, but if someone really wants that stuff like novations or something like that, it might work out. And that's why I like the satellite imagery. It also, you brought up an interesting idea this morning about looking back at some satellite imagery from 20 years ago to understand where the houses were then that may now have some equity. And so understanding, this is where you can get really creative with a lot of your locations and play with things. I love the satellite imagery because it just gives you so many more, and you can really just understand, where do I need to be targeting without going too rural? That's the question that satellite really answers. So
yeah,
it's an awesome tool.
That's so interesting. And yeah, that is an idea I had this morning. I don't know what we'll do about it. I was just saying that actually means, maybe that actually means something. Okay, to close it up, people ask all the time, where are the locations that give you the best ROI? How would you answer that question?
That's a tough question to answer because it's not very straightforward. But the answer to that question lies in your operations and understanding what you can do in dispo, because that kind of data is going to be invaluable to you to understanding what gives you the right ROIs, as well as understanding which type of markets you need as part of your strategy, whether you need to be in the heart of a primary because you're only really doing wholesale, and so you need places where you can easily get buyers and things like that. Or if you do flips, you can go out a little bit further in secondary, tertiary, if you're in a local market that is that already, it works well. So the best targeting for the best ROI relies on how you understand your business and your acquisition team and your dispo team and what you can operate in, and also understanding how the lead quality applies from what you have done previously into what you're doing now.
Yeah, great answer. I would just also say another way to think about it is there's generally two ways to optimize things. We talk about this with Google Ads all the time. So there's the first one is, how do you optimize within your parameters? Right. So this could be like the operations of your business and how it's set up now, right? Mm-hmm. They're talking about like considering how you function as a business right now. This is how you would optimize to do the best that you can. Then the next level of optimization, which is really hard and it's big bets, big swings, you hit the home run sometimes, is thinking, how do you change those parameters in order to potentially open up other options? And the thing that I would say with that I personally am seeing is our clients that have the highest return on investment right now, and the clients that have the lowest return on investment right now, are both doing really wide targeting across many markets. And the reason I say both of those is because people try this model and they fail. It's hard. And if your business isn't set up well for it, then you'd be much better off just doing something that your business is really uniquely good at. But those that are going really wide across 200 markets or more are doing really well, but they have to have the exit strategy for it. And it seems like anything that touches the MLS is good. Yeah. If you try to wholesale it, not good.
Not so much.
Novations are definitely the most popular right now. And I'd say if I had to choose a single strategy it seems like our clients have on average the highest ROI with, it is definitely like 100 plus markets and novation focused disposition strategies. That's working really well because you don't have to really take on a lot of risk doing these novations. You have the perfect buyers list everywhere, which is the MLS. You can work in smaller markets that other people can't work in, so you can get your lead cost lower. You do have a slower cash conversion cycle.
Yeah.
And it is a pain in the butt of a business to run because you're dealing with stuff all kinds of different places. And we've seen people, like I said, fail horribly there. So it's all about having a business that is set up for that. But
yeah,
something to think about.
There's a big difference that people don't expect going to like virtual acquisitions models when you go wide like that. And it's a bigger jump than people think it is. And I think that's where a lot of people fail, because they're like, oh, I could do that. I do it here. Why not just on the phone? But at the same time, like if you can do virtual, that's where I think a big asset is. If you can do virtual acquisitions, we had a client we were working with, and he was in a local market, and he was just like, I can't make this work. It's just not great. And it's not working out. It was just in one single market. And then we're like, he mentioned that he was doing virtual acquisitions. And we were like, why are you just in one market? And he had a big buyers list available to him in multiple states and everything. And it just boggled my mind that we hadn't visited this topic before. And we made the switch. We were like, okay, let's try this out. Let's see what happens. Let's go into all these other markets. Since you're already doing virtual acquisitions, you have a buyers list through this company. We ended up doing it, and it went, and it so far has gone very well. He's very happy with things. And it's turned the ship around from where he was like, I don't know if I can do Google and Facebook because it's just not working in my market, to, wow, there's so many more options. This is awesome. So I think that's just a great example of understanding your business and how you operate, and also maybe looking into learning how to do virtual if you do want to get outside of your market, because that's a massive benefit. You can always get a lot more leads if you're going wide.
Yeah. So I can give just a totally agree with you. I'm just going to think of a couple ways that our clients have failed to try to get
there are ways. Yes.
Yeah. To give some context, I've seen the whole, like, you target all those areas and you already know virtual acquisitions, but you struggle with comping. So you lock in everything too high.
Yep.
And it's really easy to do that. National model, especially because every market, they sell at a different percentage of AR and that kind of stuff. It's if your exit strategy doesn't match your location targeting well, like you're taking the location targeting from somebody who does novations, but then you're trying to wholesale, right? You're going to fail with that kind of thing. And then it's also just anytime you introduce, like I've just seen it where I had a client that switched to a national model and got almost 20 contracts in their first month. Most of them were too high. In terms of the contract price, that was a huge issue. But then in addition to that, this is a company that was doing maybe 10 deals a month in their local market, and their dispo guy was busy. And they just threw these 20 contracts on this dispo guy and said, figure out how to dispo these nationally. And they gave him investor lift.
Yeah.
Because they had investor lift. They're like, okay, we have the buyers list. Like, what could go wrong? But they closed zero of those contracts because you're going to need like excess time and resources to figure out the stuff that you just don't even know yet that you need to figure out in terms of like, how does transaction coordination differ in those areas? And what about the title companies that you should work with? And are you going to run into issues in attorney states? Or what about some of the states that you haven't thought about that have laws that make wholesaling difficult without a license? And what about the fact that you can't just go to investor lift and blast everything out because everybody unsubscribed from the emails? And yep. You're going to actually have to have like VAs calling through and presenting your deal to buyers. And do you have that staff for that? Do you have the staff to organize the people to do that? Like, all this stuff is really, really important and often overlooked, right? So if I'm thinking like, how do I implement this? I'm curious to hear your thoughts. As I would say for like most people, the answer is probably that you just shouldn't. If you're like, if you got a model and it's working, don't change your parameters. If you do, I'd say don't go all in. You want a new project that requires dedicated staff, people who have time to work through the different problems you're going to run into, and then a dedicated budget and all those things, and expect that you're going to lose money for a while before you figure it out. But it can be an awesome investment. You have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly it. It's something where it can be an amazing option that can also be incredibly hard to do. So you need to be prepared if you're going to do it. But at the same time, I think with the way the things have gone, especially recently with COVID and the market and everything like that, I think wholesaling is no longer the easiest option, obviously, which it has been for a while. And so looking for other options is just a key part of continuing chugging along with your business, where finding these options. And if the nationwide model looks like something that you might be able to operationally do, it's a massive lift. But if you can make it work, a lot of people I've seen do it and have made it work have done extremely well.
It's so scalable. I can't think of any other situation where someone has a marketing channel that they're doing significant volume on, and you can just literally see the metrics in the platform right there that show you that you can like 20x your lead volume.
Yeah, there is very few limitations once you're at that scale. Yeah. And you can do what you want. It's just really hard to get there. Want to go that direction, be prepared. It's not going to be easy. And there's a lot of changes you'll probably have to make. And you're going to have to be on your teams like crazy, watching what they're doing, retraining like crazy too. But it's a fantastic option. I think not enough people utilize that could. One thing I would recommend adding to this scenario though, is we've been talking about the nationwide model and going really wide and things like that. A word of caution is you don't necessarily have to go all of the US nationwide, like what we've been talking about here, but even expanding into one or two more states or something to that effect and understanding that. I talked to a guy this morning who's in one state and he's been considering going to two other states that are really good markets. And the question was, why not? And he's like, I don't know yet. I just haven't really done it. So I'm like, let's test it out. So you don't necessarily have to go completely nationwide, but even expanding into one or two more states or something like that, if you can do it, is a much easier lift and isn't something where you're necessarily like going crazy and changing your whole business model to go all across the US. So
yeah, take it one step at a time. Yeah. We had Aaron Gaunt on the podcast a month ago or something like that. And he started with us in Inland Empire, California. And then he expanded into San Antonio because he randomly got a lead there because stray leads happen. And he closed it and he was like, wait, I could do this there. Yeah. And then we expanded into all the markets in Texas, all the major markets. And now he's in like the whole Sun Belt area. And each time he's gone a little bit wider, he's done just a little bit better. But he had to like see it work in his business to know that he could do that. And taking those baby steps has made sense for him. So yeah, I completely agree with you. I think as entrepreneurs, sometimes we have this tendency to see point A and point B and just try to draw the most straight line between A and B as we possibly can. And it's not really how business usually works, right? There's a lot of steps in between A and B, and they don't all feel like perfectly in that direction, but it gets you there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my thoughts on that, is just take it one step at a time if you need to. And that's a great way to dip your toe into that scale and see how much further you can go.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, I think that's it for today's episode. We will have a few episodes with some guests and things like that. But next for this series is going to be talking about bid strategies. So stay tuned for that, and I'll see you next time.